from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, thousands of California schools are in need of building upgrades, and this November, voters will decide if the state should issue $9 billion in bonds for school construction projects. But critics say the measure is flawed and a giveaway to developers. We hear from both sides as part of Forum's 2016 election coverage. Then at 10:30, hula dancing has come a long way from the cliche of a grass skirt and hand-waving. We talk with San Francisco-based hula master Patrick Makuakani about weaving traditional hula with electronic music or pop, and we talk with the journalist who's written about Makuakani in her new book on the evolution of hula. That's all next on Forum. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Among the 17 state initiatives, one that's not getting much attention, even though a lot of money is at stake, is Proposition 51. It would allow the state to issue $9 billion in bonds for school construction projects. Supporters say many school buildings statewide are in need of repair or updating. But opponents argue Proposition 51 is the wrong way to fund the necessary upgrades. We hear from both sides in this half hour of Forum. First, we go to KQED's education reporter Anna Tantakalos for a quick overview of the specifics. Good morning, Anna Tantakalos.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sure. And hey, Anna, can you tell us how would the $9 billion be used?
Right. Well, so it's split between K-12 public schools and community colleges. So about $7 billion of the $9 billion, so that's roughly 80%, would go towards modernization of older buildings at K-12 public school campuses. Things like air conditioning, new roofs, and upgrading of security. Other uses could be, you know, the creation of career tech facilities and charter schools. The $2 billion for community colleges would go to similar things. It would go toward any facility project, maybe buying land, constructing new buildings, again, modernizing existing buildings, and even purchasing equipment. So that's how it kind of breaks down.
And there's also about, what, $500 million or so for charter schools as well?
That's right. And that's a big problem in California that charters consistently point to, is that the public school system simply doesn't have enough space for charters to move into. And so that would be a huge part of the growth of charters in many public school districts.
So what would be the total cost to the state once they've fully repaid, you know, this bond?
Okay, so this is kind of the point in contention. The Legislative Analyst's Office here in Sacramento predicts that if Prop 51 passes and the $9 billion in bonds were sold, the total cost to pay off the bonds would be $17.6 billion. So you're looking at $9 billion in principal plus about, you know, $8 billion in interest. So
over the course of about 35 years, you're saying?
That's right. So the average payment for the next, you know, 35 years would cost the state about $500 million.
Now, this proposition had some early support in April, I think, with more than 60% of voters saying they would support it. But that support seems to have eroded in the last PPIC poll.
That's right. The recent poll here says that it's pretty split. 47% say they would support this, and 43% say no, they would not support this. Now, that could be in part because there's too many initiatives on the ballot this year. But I do think more folks are questioning whether this money is being put to good use or whether that money should go towards other things within the classroom, like, you know, teacher salaries, operations, not so much the brick and mortar of things.
And we'll hear from both sides of the proposition to tell us why they think it's good and why they think it's problematic. Anna Tantakalos, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
KQED's education reporter Anna Tantakalos. This is a half-hour segment, so I'd like to invite calls early if you have some thoughts on this proposition or questions. It's a proposition that would allow the state to issue $9 billion in bonds for school construction projects. And the number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Facebook and Twitter are also available to you to post your comments. And our website is kqed.org/forum. All right, let me introduce to you the folks who are representing two sides on Proposition 51. Joan Buchanan, she is a spokesperson for the Yes on Prop 51 campaign, and she's also a former state assembly member for the 16th District, including Alameda and Contra Costa County. Good morning, Joan Buchanan.
Morning.
We're also joined by Rick Marshall. He is a spokesperson for No on Prop 51, and he's with the California Taxpayers Action Network. Good morning, Rick Marshall.
Good morning, Mina.
Well, thanks to both of you for being here. Joan Buchanan, I want to start with you. You know, many districts pass local bonds for school construction. Why isn't that enough?
Well, historically, local bonds and the fees developers pay for about 70% of all school construction. The state pays for roughly 30%, and it's a partnership that's worked well for over two decades now. The reality in California is we have roughly 1,000 school districts, 10,000 schools. We have over 6.5 million students that we educate. The responsibility to educate our children is written into the state constitution, not into any local city or county ordinance, and it makes sense that the state's a partner. We haven't passed a bond since 2006. We have a backload of need. We have schools that need to be modernized. We have classrooms that are overcrowded in those districts that are growing. We have the need for more career technical facilities. And as you said, the charter schools don't have space. I mean, there is a need for construction dollars, and the state should be a partner in it.
And Rick Marshall, hard to argue with. Why do you have a problem with Proposition 51?
Because it's unnecessary. The whole thing, if you take a look at statewide, the local bond measures that are on the ballot, there's 184 of them statewide. The total amount is $25.2 billion. Since Proposition 39 was passed back in 1998, over 80% of those bond measures passed. What that means is there's going to be $20 billion worth of local bonds infused into those communities. That's local control. They know the local need. Statewide, we may have an amalgamated need, but it's the locals who know where the real need is, and they don't need the state coming in and telling them what to do.
Well, a listener comments, KQED's On Shaky Ground series left no doubt that many California schools are seismically unsafe and need to be fixed or rebuilt before it's too late. Having helped pass the Measure J Oakland Unified School District, I can assure you that supplemental state funds are needed to help our students have safe, updated schools where they can learn. Local bonds are not enough, especially in poor cities, to replace all the old, decrepit buildings and grounds our kids must use. Rick Marshall, one of the other concerns that you have is that it is what you've described as basically a subsidy to developers or a support for developers who are bankrolling a lot of the support for this measure.
Yes, that is a concern. But if I could just pop back to the poor communities, we understand there's a need to help poor communities, but we don't believe it's a $9 billion need. And we think, just as the Sacramento Bee does, that the governor should work and come back to the voters with a much smaller bond targeted to those communities, and they're not. As for the developers, yes, there's a thing called developer fees, and it was alluded to earlier, that are charged to developers for their new homes. And the reason that is because their new homes require new schools. And there's a cost to build those new schools, and so the district needs the funds to do that, and that comes from developer fees. Right now, those fees are limited to half of the cost because when a statewide bond proposition is passed, it limits them to half because there's state funding available. When the state funding runs out, then they go up to 100%. This last May, several districts, including Dublin Unified, there in the San Francisco Bay Area, went to the state allocation board and says, please, let us raise the fees to 100%. The state board agreed. Then the developers went to court, got a temporary stay, and this last August, the judge agreed with the state allocation board, and now districts are looking at raising those fees. We think that's the way to go.
Joan Buchanan, so, you know, what Rick Marshall is saying is that as long as there's state bond money available, local districts won't be able to require developers to pay more than half the cost of these new classrooms. Why is that necessary, a necessary provision of the proposition?
It's actually part of legislation that was passed in 1998. You had a situation after Prop 13 passed that districts couldn't pass bonds. You had a backlog of need. You had developers suing districts suing developers, portable classrooms being wheeled on that were falling apart. And everyone came together in 1998 and formed the grand bargain, which was we've got a three-legged stool. You've got districts locally that pass bonds. You've got developers that pay fees. And you have a state that participates. But, you know, I want to point out two things. One is this isn't a developer bond. This bond is backed by the Democratic Party. It's backed by the Republican Party. It's backed by the Chamber of Commerce. It's backed by Caltax. It's backed by virtually every school organization. It's backed by groups like the East Bay Leadership Organization. I mean, everyone recognizes that having safe, adequate schools is an important part of the infrastructure of this state. There's nothing more important we do than educate our children to be the future leaders, innovators, and workers.
So
let me go to the developer fee issue. Mm-hmm. Is that we can say developers pay it, but what happens is those fees get passed on to the people who buy the homes. When someone is building a project, they pencil out what it costs to put in the roads, to pay for the schools, to physically construct the homes, and all that gets factored into the cost of a home. The people who buy those homes not only pay all the additional fees, they pay for all the existing taxes and liens. So they're paying for the bonds that were passed to modernize schools that their kids aren't going to go to. So the people who buy those homes, in essence, definitely pay their fair share. The legislative analysts came out with a report this week that talked about Prop 13 and what happened. And what happened when it passed was property taxes went down 60%. How that's been made up is through local fees. And certainly people who buy new homes pay more than their fair share. On average, they pay over $100,000 per home in fees.
So are you saying that you think that a half requirement on developers would reduces the cost of homes?
I say it does factor into it, yes. But I also say for those people who are paying half, because that half, I mean, I was in a district where we doubled in size, the district San Ramon Valley next to it. Not only are those people paying for those, they're paying for every bond that's already levied on their property taxes. So I think if you add in aggregate all that they're paying, they are paying for the cost of their schools.
Well, Terry comments, before the people who have housing and jobs receive additional benefits for their kids from taxpayers, shouldn't the people who have no housing at all and no jobs be given a priority? $9 billion would put thousands of homeless into homes that would be used to create work programs. Sure, an earthquake might happen, but homelessness is happening every day. So how would the state pay it back? Would the money come out of the general fund, Joan Buchanan?
Yes, the money comes out of the general fund. It's part of the debt payment schedule that we have. I mean, when people buy a house, generally speaking, you take out a 30-year mortgage. Well, for major capital improvements that the state also pays for those over time because the life of the asset is 25, 30, 35 years or longer.
Well, let's go to Catherine in Mountain View. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I definitely disagree with charter schools and them being on the same level as public schools, as regular public schools. So I don't think that they should be included in this.
Well, Catherine, thanks for registering your view. Did you want to respond to that, Joan?
Well, I have my own feelings on charter schools, and this isn't about whether or not we should have charter schools, because certainly it's written into state legislation, and we have to provide space for them. So what happens with bonds? They've received $500,000 in prior bonds. I'll be honest with you, it's part of the big grand bargain you have in order to get support and put a bond on the ballot. And the reality is in school districts, and this happens down where you live, is that districts have an obligation to provide facilities. So if you don't have money through the state to match to help provide charter school facilities, then it's going to come out of a district's general fund, or it's going to be disruptive in districts in terms of having to redraw boundaries or whatever you're going to do to accommodate those charter school students. So,
well, Rick Marshall, one of the other concerns that your group has had is that applications for the bond money, should this pass, would be addressed on a first-come, first-served basis. What's wrong with that?
Well, the problem is that there are large, wealthy districts like Los Angeles Unified, where I live, have a dedicated and permanent facility staff. You have to deal with up to 10 state agencies to get this money, and they are ready to go. Whereas when you have a poor school district that doesn't have a dedicated facility staff, which doesn't have all the things you need to get through that state bureaucracy, they lose out. It's the first come, first serve. The people that are in line first get the money. In fact, I think there was a recent study that showed a quarter of the bond money has been doled out to these huge districts who have no problem passing school bond measures.
Joan Buchanan, you mentioned several people who are in support of the bond measure, but one of the folks you didn't mention was Governor Jerry Brown. Now, he isn't formally opposed to it, but he did speak strongly about it in February when he called it a developer's $9 billion bond and, quote, a blunderbuss effort that promotes sprawl and squanders money that would be far better spent in low-income communities. He was concerned also about equity between school districts.
You know, I sat on the state allocations board that approves the allocation or the distribution of bond money for 4 years. And one of the other – my other colleagues from the assembly was Kurt Hegman, who was the Republican floor leader. And we took a look at – we spent a year on a subcommittee taking a look at the past bonds, where the money's gone, how the program works. And the reality is what you're getting is political rhetoric, that there is no evidence whatsoever that the money is only going to the big districts. When we took a look at it, money was and you take out the fact that, yeah, in L.A., it's going to look like they're getting money because the population is in L.A., and L.A.'s school district has 650,000 students. Half your school districts in the state of California have 2,000 or less. But when you actually take a look at the distribution of funds on a per-student basis, it's amazing how equally distributed it is throughout the state. And there are districts in this state who wouldn't be able to afford any kind of improvements or schools without a state bond, because included in the programs are what we call financial hardship and facilities hardship. So you have county offices of education that serve some of our neediest students, the courts, the students who are wards of the court, special education students, and they have no ability to bond. Without financial hardship for them, they would not be able to add new facilities or accommodate the students. So I think the existing program has worked quite well and has been, like I said, the data just doesn't support that argument. It has been distributed equally throughout the state.
So you don't think, for example, there needs to be some kind of additional oversight to make sure that the allocation is balanced?
Well, there are some recommendations that we had after we spent a year studying this, but there is nothing that has to be done through the ballot. If there are a few changes that we think should be made, but that can be made very easily. You don't even need the legislative process. They can be made through the state allocations board itself.
Well, we're getting some more listener comments. No on 51, one listener writes. Bonds are extremely expensive to California taxpayers. We cannot afford them. And Nathan writes, no more bonds, please. As a voter, I am constantly appalled by our use of bonds. I usually won't vote for a measure that is paid for with a bond. Why would we waste so much money on the interest when we could simply raise taxes to pay for the services we want? Joan Buchanan.
Well, if we could raise taxes to pay for this in another way, I think we would. But I think you have to look at what the purpose is of the bond. You know, I fiscally was one of the most conservative Democrats in the state legislature. And I certainly don't believe that we should be paying for bonds like we did a few years ago for stem cell research, because that's an ongoing expense that is not appropriate for bonds. But I think when you take a look at good, prudent fiscal management, what you like to do is match the term of payment to the life of the asset. It's the reason we take out a 30-year mortgage to pay for a home, but we don't take out a 30-year loan to pay for a car, because that car is not going to last for 30 years. So the state has vital infrastructure that's important, and schools last. I mean, they don't need to be modernized for 20, 25, 30, 35 years. So I think paying for those school additions and improvements with bonds is absolutely appropriate.
And, you know, earlier when I mentioned Jerry Brown's comments, he called it a developer's bond. If it's not a developer's bond, why are they bankrolling it to the degree that they are? I mean, they've raised a big portion of that they've contributed a big portion of that $9 million to fight for its passage.
Developers have supported every bond we've had. And the reason is because they know that if they don't have good schools, they can't sell their homes. If you take a look at the Daugherty Valley, which is part of the San Ramon Valley Unified School District where I live, the number one factor that was included in advertisements for schools there were the schools. You know, come buy our homes, send your kids to outstanding schools. If developers, if you don't have good schools, okay, you can't sell homes.
Well, let me just get your opinion then. Do you think it's fair for developers to just pay half or no more than half in terms of the construction fees related to the subdivisions that they build? Do you think this is something that should continue to be a part of the law with this bond that would move forward for multiple years? Do you think that's if it were up to you, would you?
It's easy to say the developers are paying, but the cost is paid by the new homeowner. Those costs get factored in, and that new homeowner not only pays the cost of the developer fees that are paid, that homeowner also pays the cost of all the other assessments on the home. So if you want to charge full developer fees, then you have to ask yourself, should that homeowner pay those costs in addition to the cost to modernize all the other schools and all those additions? And you know, I think we have a system that works.
Well, let me just get
a long time.
Quick response from Rick Marshall, since we only have 2 minutes left. Rick, do you want to respond to that?
I would like to. First of all, the people who are paying those developer fees on those new homes are the ones whose kids go to those new schools. My kids don't go to those schools. And what it is, someone asked about raising taxes. Developer fees are taxes. Those are raising them. That's what we're asking. Everybody wants to raise taxes. Here's a perfect opportunity. Why keep them down? Third, developers can't pass those fees on to the homeowner if the price of the house is too high. They're going to have to make it so that people can afford those homes. This fixes it so they don't have to worry about that. And it's shifting the cost right directly onto taxpayers, and that's not right.
Well, you may not want to pay the cost of adding schools in a new area, but should they pay the cost of modernizing your children's schools? And when you take a look at the housing crisis we have in this state, it's one thing if you live in an area like I live and you want to raise developer fees because houses sell, you know, for $700,000, $800,000, $900,000, $1 million or more. It's another thing when you have a housing crisis out in an area like the San Joaquin Valley because you can't just pass that. You know, the people who are buying those homes can't absorb that extra cost. I think the real question is, should the state be a partner in school construction? The responsibility to educate our...
And Rick,
you might be surprised. I agree
Marshall.
With you. The state can be a partner, but they should be a partner in providing a stipend every year for schools, because we have to keep our schools maintained, and the state doesn't do that, and we shouldn't be out there borrowing money. What we should be doing is taking a piece of the state general fund and putting it towards school construction.
All right, Rick Marshall, a spokesperson for No on Prop 51. His organization is the California Taxpayers Action Network. Thanks for being here, Rick Marshall. We also were joined today by Joan Buchanan, spokesperson for Yes on Prop 51 and a former state assembly member for the 16th District, which includes Alameda and Contra Costa County. Proposition 51, a $9 billion school construction bond that will be on this November's ballot. Up next, we get our hula on with Connie Hale and hula master Patrick Makuakani. Join us for that. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.